You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
From the studios of Community Radio, 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB, this is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, January 24, 2018.
I mean, obviously, we are looking forward to re-electing Joe Donnelly as our United States Senator, and then hopefully elect some labor-friendly folks in the State House and the State Senate.
Coming up later in the program, with the Indiana legislative session in full swing, we'll hear from Indiana AFL-CIO President Brett Voorhees about the union conglomerate's lobbying efforts this session.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Better Beware's Richard Fish receives a death threat. He'll take us through that scam later on in the program and on a new edition of our Consumer Watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
The City of Bloomington's December deer cull succeeded in culling 62 deer from the Lake Griffey Nature Preserve. Natural Resources Manager Steve Cotter updated the Board of Park Commissioners on the cull in their meeting last night.
The results of the cull, which took place over 10 nights between December 15th and 28th, there was no sharp shooting on the 24th, 25th, or 26th. Removal of 62 deer. Of those deer, 43 were females and 19 were males.
The city's last attempt at a deer cull in 2014 was not so successful. Cotter says a plentiful acorn crop that year prevented deer from taking the bait laid out for them. Cotter says last month's successful deer cull yielded food for local food banks.
The deer were processed by KW Deer Processing here in town, with financial assistance from Farmers and Hunters Feeding the Hungry. 1,682 pounds of venison was donated to the Hoosier Hills Food Bank, and I've heard that about two-thirds of that has already been distributed.
The cull cost $43,500. That's $700 a head. The cost includes a $35,000 contract with White Buffalo Incorporated for sharpshooters, as well as the cost of processing the deer meat and other associated expenses. Cotter and researchers from Indiana University's biology department have consistently argued that deer feeding on the nature preserve's forest understory are tearing it down faster than it can regenerate. In a presentation to the park board last July, Cotter said more than 575 different types of plants at Griffey Lake are at risk from what he calls deer browsing.
The goal of the deer cull in 2017 was to remove enough deer from the Griffey Lake Nature Preserve to reduce the browse pressure on understory plant species and seedling trees to the point these species are able to recover and to grow once again at Griffey Lake. The reestablishment and median heights of different indicator plant species, including violets, trilliums, baneberry, jack-in-the-pulpit, and sweet Sicily, as well as the abundance and height of native hardwood tree seedlings, have been studied and will continue to be studied to determine the success of deer reduction efforts.
The effect of deer browsing was detailed nearly a decade ago in the Griffey Lake Master Plan update. In 2010, the city and county together created a deer task force, in part to find ways to mitigate the deer's ecological impact. After 2 years of research, the task force released a report in 2012. Cotter read from that report, which describes the deer's impact in more detail.
Clear evidence points to ecosystem damage by deer. Native tree seedlings are not regenerating. Herbaceous plant species are severely compromised and possibly going locally extinct. Invasive species are taking over some areas, and the forest understory is unnaturally open. Understory-reliant birds and other animals are losing habitat.
Cotter says the task force recommended sharpshooting for, quote, immediate, substantial, and humane reduction of the deer population.
To restore the ecological integrity of Griffey, a substantial number of deer need to be culled soon to avoid irreversible ecological damage. Sharpshooting is the most efficient way to cull the greatest number of deer in the most humane way possible.
Ultimately, the city and county will have to develop a long-term deer management plan.
All of the animal species at Griffey rely on plants for their survival. Deer have reduced the number, size, and reproductive success of most species of plants in the preserve, which has had a negative effect on the animals, birds, reptiles, amphibians, insects, and other life forms that live there. Deer browse pressure must be kept low, especially during the recovery period, if populations of these species are to thrive within the Griffey Lake Nature Preserve.
Cotter says a long-term plan could include allowing local hunters on public properties through the state's new Community Hunting Access Program. The Indiana Department of Natural Resources developed the program as a tool for communities to address large deer populations. After Cotter's presentation, Parks Board President Kathleen Mills sought to clarify a misunderstanding about the cull among the public.
Just a comment. I appreciate all the details, and I also wanted to clarify a kind of misrepresentation. There was a guest column in the Herald Times that said the deer cull was a failure because the way it was phrased was the goal was 100 deer, 62 were killed, therefore it was a failure. But, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but as I remember the contracts, the language we signed off on was up to 100 deer.
That's correct. Okay. That was the language in the permit as well, that it was 100 was the maximum number.
Right, okay. So it's not the 100 was the be-all and end-all and it failed because it was 62. It was, yeah, that was this the cap of what it could be. Right?
Thank you for that clarification.
Yeah.
Cotter says the city won't know if the December cull was a success until the team can measure the plants. Cotter discussed that process with board member Darcy Fawcett, and he says they'll start by measuring wildflowers this April.
And then the tree measurements will occur a little bit later than that. So this spring and summer, we'll be measuring the plants out there again, as we have been for the last 4 years.
I guess it's sooner than what I would thought that you'd be able to see an impact or whether or not there was an impact that quick.
That's right. We're not sure what we're going to find. A lot depends on the weather conditions, of course, and how sunny it is early in the season. But we've been measuring for a while, and we'll continue that, and hopefully we'll see some trends that show that the plant community is recovering.
The next Park Board meeting is scheduled for Tuesday, February 27th.
The Indiana legislature is in full swing. Lawmakers are meeting at the State House in Indianapolis to consider bills and new legislation this session. WFHB correspondent Jonah Chester reports that includes a law that would prohibit municipalities from taxing or abolishing Airbnbs.
The Indiana House of Representatives recently approved a bill that would curtail regulations of short-term rentals such as Airbnb. The bill, created by Republican Matt Lehman of Bern, is an edited and scaled-back version of a bill he introduced to the House in 2017. The current iteration of the bill would allow homeowners the ability to rent out their primary residence on sites like Airbnb without any interference by county and city laws and policies. Several Indiana cities and townships have tried in the past several years to impose regulations and restrictions on Airbnb rentals. A year ago, the city of Carmel told residents who were renting property that they were in violation of city zoning laws. The Indianapolis Star reported at the time that residents were told they had 10 days to remove listings from Airbnb and similar sites or they would face penalties from the code enforcement inspector. In 2016, the city of Bloomington also proposed regulations on Airbnb rentals that would require hosts to receive permits and regular inspections. After pushback from the community, the regulations were dropped, according to Indiana Public Media. This new bill does create tighter regulations on renting out secondary properties. Local governments would still be allowed to create zoning restrictions or require a permit to rent those secondary properties. Reporting for WFHB, I'm Jonah Chester.
Both the Indiana House of Representatives and the Indiana Senate have passed legislation that would allow for the sale of alcohol on Sundays. Yesterday, the House voted to approve the Sunday sales bill 87-10. Now, this is the first time legislation that would do away with Indiana's prohibition on Sunday retail alcohol sales has passed in both the State Senate and State House of Representatives. Both the Senate and House bills are expected to be approved by their legislative counterparts. The reconciled bills are expected to be approved by Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb before the legislative session ends around March. Indiana has not allowed Sunday carryout sales of alcohol in the state since before Prohibition.
Bloomington residents can learn about housing programs, neighborhood watch programs, code enforcement, and more at a neighborhood workshop on Saturday, February 3rd. The event will be held from 10 a.m. to noon at City Hall. Housing and Neighborhood Development Director Dara Sims spoke to the Bloomington Redevelopment Commission about the event on January 22nd.
And as stated earlier, we'll have representatives from HAND there to talk about our programs, as well as representatives from the police department to talk about neighborhood policing, someone representing IU Student Services Office, as well as someone representing CONA, the Council of Neighborhood Association. So I invite you and those of the viewing public to come out to this workshop.
In other business, the commission appointed Commission Member David Walter to sit on the Neighborhood Improvement Grant Committee.
The Neighborhood Improvement Grants are the grants that we do within the HAND department for neighborhood associations that they apply for improvements in their neighborhoods. It can be sidewalk, it can be signage, it can be installation of trees. And so we like to have a representative on the Redevelopment Commission because those contracts do come to the commission for approval.
In other news, the Redevelopment Commission has a new member, Indiana University history professor Eric Sandwise. Sandwise replaces Ivy Tech Chancellor Jenny Vaughn, who resigned from the commission last year.
The City of Bloomington Utilities Department says they're making progress to replace an aging sewer line. The South Central Interceptor sewer line runs north and south along South Walnut Street from Davis Street to Gordon Pike. Interceptor sewer lines connect city sewer pipes and take them out to treatment facilities. Bloomington Utilities engineer Phil Payden updated the Utilities Service Board during its Monday meeting.
Just to give you an update on the Interceptor project, Infrastructure Systems Incorporated completed the portion in the switchyard. They're done with that. It's all passed. Everything's good. And then they started, I would say at the beginning of the year, down at Gordon Pike, and they're about halfway to Country Club. So they've got the rest of that to get to Country Club and then a portion up by Grimes and Walnut. They'll complete this summer.
According to the city's website, there were 83 sewer overflows at the intersection of Grimes Lane and South Walnut Street over the past decade. Utilities Director Vic Kelson says the $7 million sewer upgrade will eliminate overflows. The city hired environmental engineers Greeley and Hansen to design the project and infrastructure systems to build it. In their meeting, Utility Service Board approved Payden's request to amend Greeley and Harrison's contract by $25,000. Payden says the city needs to lay additional sewer pipes in the Gordon Pike area in advance of a new bridge being planned for the area.
The scope of services for this is the design of a portion of sewer about 300 feet long to get us south of a new bridge that the county is designing, or currently under design, is going to be building this fall. It's received NDOT funding. Our existing interceptor that runs through this portion is outside of the bridge limits, and the current bridge is only 68 feet wide, and the new bridge is going to be close to 250 feet wide. So they're taking up a lot more space. They're going to restrict that zone, that area we need to get downstream. So it's going to limit our ability to get in there and construct this once the bridge is in.
The board also approved a new slate of officers for 2018. Julie Roberts replaces Sam Frank as board president, and Jim Sherman will serve as the board's vice president.
Support for WFHB comes from Cardinal Spirits Distillery, located on the B-line. Cardinal Spirits has opened a new kitchen featuring local, seasonal food made from scratch to complement their craft cocktails. Dinner available Tuesday through Saturday at Cardinal Spirits, 922 South Morton Street. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. The American Federation of Labor and Congress of Industrial Organizations is the largest organization of unions in the country. Indiana President Brett Voorhees says the state's AFL-CIO chapter is currently lobbying to get Indiana Democratic Senator Joe Donnelly reelected. Donnelly is the target of several Republican hopefuls this election year. He's currently considered a Democratic bastion in one of 11 states where Republicans hold a supermajority. Voorhees says the AFL-CIO is also employing nearly a dozen lobbyists in the State House and is pushing for the removal of the state's Sunday alcohol laws. We now go to an interview with Voorhees by WFHB News Director Wes Martin.
Mr. Voorhees, I was just hoping to speak with you for a minute to talk about some of the legislative priorities that the Indiana AFL-CIO has for this coming legislative session. And so I was hoping you could talk a little bit about some of the bills that the AFL-CIO is looking at and what the priorities are for union organizations.
It's been a fairly quiet session this month, or so far this go around, and it being a short session, everything's kind of like going quick. And I mean, we're tracking probably over 200 bills right now. But a lot of them have already died off and are not getting hearings, to be quite honest with you. I mean, after this week, next week, there's only one more committee meeting left, and most of our bills are in labor and pensions. So we don't foresee anything coming at us really hard against labor, which has been going on quite a bit in the past this session. Plus, it makes a difference going into election year as well. So, I mean, there's really nothing major. I mean, we're tracking a number of different bills. But there's nothing major that pops up that we're like totally worried about. I mean, to be honest with you, we even weighed in on Sunday sales a little bit, because a lot of our members, we represent all the Kroger stores and we make the, a lot of different brands of beer, and we make the bottles and we make the cans. So, I mean, that's just a kind of something that, most wouldn't expect labor to get involved in, but we do have a lot of members that work in that field. So that's one of them. I mean, there's an unemployment insurance bill out there, which gets very complicating. Our guys at the legislature have been working on. There's not a whole lot to it. I hear it's probably not even going to get a hearing going through. And then there was a couple other bills when it came to some of them on the responsible bidding orders in cities and towns, which would be create somewhat of a project labor agreement type in cities and towns, but I don't even think that one's getting a hearing as well. There's a few attacks on different public education bills. There's so many of those every session. It's kind of hard to pick and choose which ones. So, but all of us laborers, I mean, there's probably 10, 12, at least, probably a dozen, labor lobbyists at the State House where we all work together and everybody gets to sign their bills. To be quite frank with you, myself, I've not spent a lot of time at the legislature. I've been briefed on our legislative director and our secretary treasurer, who's actually down there as we speak, working on legislation right now. So we're pleased so far because everything's quiet and we're able to work on other issues and get ready for the 2018 elections.
Thank you very much for that update, Mr. Voorhees. Anything else that you think listeners should know about the status of labor in Indiana or what it is that you're looking forward to or Congress of Industrial Workers is looking forward to as we advance into 2018?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to a lot. I mean, obviously, we are looking forward to reelecting Joe Donnelly as our United States Senator and then hopefully elect some labor friendly folks in the State House and the State Senate. And so we've been gearing up for that. We're excited about going into this next year. I mean, we have lost quite a few jobs in Indiana due to trade and outsourcing. So you're going to see a lot of that going on, a lot of talk about trade and shipping jobs abroad and overseas as well. So, but we're really excited and we feel like, we're growing. A lot of our affiliates have organizing drives going on. People are starting to thrive, wanting to join a union. People are tired of working one and two, three jobs when they can go and work a union job and make a decent wage and maybe have a pension and maybe be able to take their family on vacation once a year. So So we are thriving. Our phone rings off the hook every single day. People want to join unions. And like I said, we've got affiliates with drives going on statewide, and we're just excited about moving things forward.
And Mr. Voorhees, you had mentioned Senator Donnelly. He seems to be, it really seems like the GOP in Indiana is really gunning for that Senate seat between Mr. Rokita and Mr. Messer, at least. I'm wondering, is there any particular drive or anything that AFL-CIO is particularly doing to support Senator Donnelly?
Oh, I mean, we're just educating our members that, I mean, he's got a 98% lifetime voting record with the AFL-CIO, and he stood on the front lines when it came to the closing of the partial closing of Carrier and the closing of Rexnord, which is the facility I came out of originally, and the trade votes and everything else that deals with labor, the economy. You know, Joe Donnelly has been there for us, and we're excited about that. We're excited to push and put him over across the finish line again, like we did in 2012. And I'm pretty optimistic that we're going to make that happen.
Mr. Voorhees, thank you very much for taking the time out of your day to speak with me, and good luck this session.
Okay, thank you so much.
That was WFHB News Director Wes Martin speaking with Indiana AFL-CIO President Brett Voorhees about union priorities this legislative session.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Well, after more than 10 years doing this segment, it finally happened. I got a death threat. And I laughed and ignored it. No, really. But I thought I might as well tell you about it because it's a really nasty con. It was an email, almost in good English, aside from the typos, odd capitalization, and some grammatical potholes, ostensibly from someone named Bernard Alford. That's with two L's, basketball fans, with the subject line, "This is probably the most important information you'll ever read." Inside, it began ominously, "I advise you to take this message seriously if you value your own life, since this is not a joke. I have been thinking for a long period of time whether it's worth writing this message to you, and decided that, after all, you have the right to know." Huh? "I will be short. I received an order to remove you because your activity causes trouble to a particular person. I studied you for a very long period of time and made a decision to give you a chance, despite the specifics of my job, the ethics of which don't allow me to do this, as this will kill my reputation, almost 12 years of impeccable order executions. But since this is my last one, I hope, I decided to break some rules. In general, let's break it down. I want you to pay the amount of 0.8 Bitcoin. I accept Bitcoin." To find out how to pay, there was a link, which you can bet your last dollar I did not click. And then, like all scams, there's the urgency, a really short deadline. "When I'll receive funds," that's pretty weird, "I will tell you the name of the person order came from," whoops, missed a word, "plus all the evidence I have. You will be able to use them with the authorities. I wouldn't suggest you to call the police," put in an extra word, "because you have a little time," there's that extra word again, "2 days, and the police simply will not have time to investigate." Then I'm told not to respond, and Mr. Bernard Does Not Exist Alford will contact me after he gets his Bitcoin. Finally, a gush of sympathy.
I sincerely feel sorry that you became my target. Jeez, methinks he doth protest too much, as Mrs. Shakespeare's little boy Billy used to say. This racket is old. The FBI posted a warning back in January 2007, and their Internet Crime Complaint Center also reported emails that claimed to be from the FBI, saying an arrest was made in the case and asking for a reply to help further the investigation. That's another scam. Now look, I get to put this stuff on radio, but if you get one of these, just delete it and sleep soundly. Shakespeare had it right. Death, where is thy sting? I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at wfhb.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@wfhb.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin and Jonah Chester, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
Our engineer today is Dan Withard. Our theme music provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program, recognized among the best newscasts in 2016 by the Indiana chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org. And stay tuned for the Shortwave Report with Dan Roberts, a weekly look at headlines from around the world. That's coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.